Welcome to The Griot's Remedy, a Book Loudly production, part of Pecan Tree Creative Solutions. This is where authors, coaches, and mental health professionals gather around the mic to explore themes brought to life in fictional works. What will they pull out of the bag on this episode? Keep it locked right here to find out. The Griot's Remedy is designed to be an entertaining and insightfully creative exploration of life issues through the lens of characters written in fiction and creative nonfiction stories, and excerpts of full versions of scripts written for the stage or film. Thoughts, comments, and observations by the host, coaches, counselors, and therapists are not to be construed as personal advice or direction. Here is your host, author, publisher, and award-winning playwright, E. Claudette Freeman.
And we are, in fact, back on The Griot's Remedy with episode 5. I totally messed up my episode count last time, guys, but just, you know, I admitted to Renee and Weena that I am numerically challenged. And so now I've just told the world, and I feel so much better now that I've released it. Now that everybody knows I'm numerically challenged. Of course, those who are my friends who will hear that will be like, they don't even know the half of how numerically challenged you really are. But it's a beautiful thing. I make up for it in words. How about that? Is that good? I make up for it in words. So welcome back, ladies. We are, in fact, in episode 5 and want to reintroduce the crew. Renee Odrick is a board-certified professional life coach, counselor, author, and meditation and mindfulness trainer. She holds an MBA in business management and organization and has over 30 years of experience as a business professional with expertise in relationships, training, leadership, caregiving, and organization. She is the CEO of Meditational Moment Incorporated and Meditational Academy, established to counsel, educate, train, and inspire all individuals to incorporate meditation in their lives as a catalyst for God alignment. And you can connect with her at Meditational Moment for bookings and appointments, and to connect with her on all of her social media pages there as well. And Weena Wise is a licensed couple and family therapist, certified professional coach, clinical writer, and public speaker in the DC metropolitan area. She's the owner of Covenant Counseling and Consulting and Covenant Coaching Academy, with over 15 years of experience helping individuals, couples, and families achieve the personal and relationship results that they desire. You can visit covenanttherapy.com to purchase her in-home session series, schedule an appointment, book Weena for your next event, and also connect with her on social media. Welcome, ladies. Welcome back. How are you?
Great. Glad to be back.
Happy to be here.
Cool. So today we are examining an excerpt from a piece called Remembering Papa. This excerpt honors family storytelling and the gatherings that welcome those stories forward. This is a clip of a play staged by the former Heritage Ensemble Theater Company of Richmond, Virginia. Now, because this is a clip of a live performance, you'll hear audience reaction and all of that wonderful stuff. So don't let that throw you off. OK, so the story is about Papa and his adult children, Whipple, Brother Deer, and Pammy. And so, like I said, it's a delicate balance of good storytelling vibes, while also holding back some emotions and some long-held resentment. And so we'll hear that hopefully come out as we listen to the excerpt from the live performance. Some of the things that we're listening for in here, childhood trauma, resentment I mentioned, passive aggression, microaggression, failure to thrive, sibling rivalry, absolutely. Arrested development. I like that term, arrested development. So the cast in this clip are Shalandis Willer-Smith, Tony Q. Cobb, Raquin Laws, and Dante K. Rollerson. I hope I'm saying his name right. And here we go, ladies, with Remembering Papa.
Oh, she sure was crazy about Harry. Kind of remind me of the way I used to be acting your mom.
Bob, she used to come stand at the gate, holler his name.
Harry!
woman that I know that ever scared me. Sandra would come by the house that time in her Sunday dress, had it all combed, and she plopped right down on the stoop, didn't say a word. Now I'm sitting on the porch. And then finally I says, Sandra, can I help you with something, daughter? And she says, no, sir. I'm going to sit here and wait for Perry to come home from basketball practice, if you don't mind. Finally, I said to her now, son, has it ever occurred to you that maybe Perry don't like big girls? She jumped up and said, Perry's what likes me, or I'm going to beat that son of yours into the dirt. I scratched my head and said, Lord, make that boy stupid enough to like that girl. I see Brother Deer come around the corner. He looked on the porch, saw Sandra, and took off. The girl took off laughing like dogs at the truck. Here comes Speedy.
Homegirl took down 3 feet of fence just to get the bird.
Brother Deer,
you got any change on?
Yeah, bro.
What you need? Something from the store?
No. I feel my luck on me tonight. But I whoop you out of some money.
Come on.
Go get the car.
Come on. Rip,
get your money. Pam, you gonna play?
No, I just sit here and watch TV. That y'all cheating, you play.
Now, why is it you always have to accuse of cheating just because you lose?
Because how can you win? You have the card, Papa changing the rules as you go, and Brother Dick constantly talking to distract you.
Hey! Where you going, baby girl?
Oh, to get something out of my car.
Hey, turn the porch light on so you can see. Oh, shoot, I got to get my clothes on the line. You need some help out.
No, I ain't got but a few. I'll just be right back.
See if you can fix this leg on this dining room chair, though, man.
Count your change.
Yes, sir. So, big brother, what's hanging with you, man?
Not as much as what's been hanging with you, from what I understand. Yeah. Another great adventure added to your list of exciting things to do, huh?
Always put that with you, huh? So go on. Get your lecture out the way for Papa and Pam to get back. That is why you hadn't said anything before.
A 16-year-old hoodlum in a 26-year-old's body. That's what you are, man. What are you going to do with your life, man, and when? All your life, man, it's been nothing. School, woman, job to job, nothing. What do you want out of life, man? For Papa to take care of you? For Pammy to baby you? Or for me to finally say, poor woman, let me help my little brother along.
You would never do that, man. Brothers like you, worry about them and them only. I've never asked you for anything. Not even in high school. And you know, sometimes even now, I think you resent me. What do you want from me, man?
Be a man.
For by whose message? I am a man. I do what I want. I go where I feel like. I have no responsibilities to anyone. But that's a bum to you, right?
Come on, man. Life is more complex than that. You can do something else besides get bailed out all the time, can't you?
Yeah, whatever, man.
Still drawing. Always were good. Look, Whit, I just think you're deliberately not doing anything. Pammy's told me how she tried to convince you to show some of your sketches at the Art Center's gallery. And you laughed. Miss Ann ran into me one day. She wanted to know why you stopped going to classes at community college. Can I ask you something?
Saying no is not going to stop.
Isn't the attention doing nothing gets you?
What attention is that?
From Pammy? Papa? The rest of the family? You let people think you're simple so that your life moves along easy.
So let me understand what you're saying. I'm hustling my family. I got a nice little, it takes a thief stand working, right?
Basically.
You know what your problem is, man?
Gonna identify a problem with me.
Hard to believe you got it?
Go to hell, man.
You are always more than you were, man. You stand there in your bath loafers, self-righteous, with you, do something with your life, son attitude. I embarrass you, man. In high school, you were the same way. You had your clique of Afro sport Negroes who didn't want to be black and didn't want to be Negro. They were the first African Americans. And not because it paid homage to the heritage or anything, but because it looked good on your college application. And certainly, having a brother that was more concerned with getting some panties wasn't embarrassing to you. But you see, I had no problems telling people you were my brother, man. Principal's list, honors class, all that. We played on the same high school football team for 2 years, and half the team didn't know we were related. Because you made it clear, and your subtleties, you didn't want to let it be known. You weren't real then, and you're not real now. You won't give a damn if I work a day in my life. And what bothers you, people that know we're related have the audacity to question you about me. You ought to just tell them the truth. But then again, you've never asked the truth, have you?
The truth?
What's the truth, man? What's the truth? The truth is, man, your Hollywood leading man lifestyle ain't got a damn thing to do with mine.
Man, I'm tired of you hanging out. Hanging on the pop. You've been raised, boy. So be a man.
That's it! I've had up to here with this constant fighting. Every time I turn around, you two are at each other. What is wrong with you? Damn! Papa can't even enjoy an evening with his children, his supposedly grown children, without you all acting like idiots. I'm not having it. You all know how much Papa likes to kick back and tell his stories, laugh, whatever. You two can beat the hell out of each other later, but for right now...
You're talking to me like I'm the child.
Shut up! Come on, can't we just kick back with Papa and have dinner? Then you two can go about your business. And if I'm talking to you like you a child, it's because you're acting like children. You don't do this, you don't do that. Damn, big baby. Just once again, I got to act like Mama here. Let Mama teach you an important life lesson. You can love somebody without liking them.
Pop psychology, baby girl.
You've been listening to everyone for years tell you to get it together. You don't want to, fine. But I'm tired of worrying about you. And brother dear, half the time you don't want anything to do with Whipple or Papa, but at least get Whipple this. When he's not driving Papa crazy, he damn sure is looking out for him. Don't you two understand? You have to love each other. You're brothers. We were raised that way. Liking each other is something totally different.
Put these in the room for me, baby. All right, put your money on the table.
Hey, Papa, when we get down, I'll get my clippers out of the car and give you a quick cut.
Boy, I might have got old, but I am far from seen now. I'm not going to let you cut my hair.
Now, the way I sees it, I can't do any worse than your cousin Arthur did that summer.
Papa, that was one ugly cut. He had a patch here with a mile-long street. He had what was supposed to be a part here. He didn't have a part on what was supposed to be a crew cut.
And Papa wore a different hat every day to be his crew back.
Damn sure did. I hit that boy so hard after he finished with my hat, his mama.
I'm telling us, boy, you fool. His head is a new style.
Yeah, you were stupid enough to believe it. Brother dear, don't forget to take my rifle home and clean it for me.
Yes, sir. Is it still under the mattress?
How do I keep that thing?
Because it's mine. Same reason you keep that big nose.
I get it from you.
Don't go telling that lie.
Papa, you still have that pair of having gun too?
Yep. You ain't planning on pawning it, is you?
I wouldn't do that to you, man. I mean, I know I've messed around some people in the past, but I wouldn't do that to you. I just wouldn't.
I'm sure glad to get that. Daddy man never tell you about that time he almost shot me.
Oh, come on now, Papa. You couldn't have ever give your daddy any problems.
Not now, man.
Never see where you get your bad street from, huh, little brother?
All right, baby girl. Yeah, Papa, daddy man told me the story. But you tell it. Let me see if you tell it like he did.
If I remember it rightly, I must have been about 14 or 15. Now, I was supposed to be home after work for Mr. Campbell's at 9 o'clock. And Mr. Campbell told me to go straight home because I'd been out late and he knew Mom would be worried. And then, too, in them days, colored folk couldn't be out too late.
Yeah. They don't want us out too late now either.
Yeah, have mercy. You couldn't be out too late unless you was looking for trouble. At least that's what the white boys would say when they got at it. I runs into James Earl and Sonny Lee.
I know Sonny Lee had that supply, didn't he?
Yeah.
He used to sneak up to grandma's back porch with hoops for granddad.
Oh, he sure was the one with it. I believe he took it from under his mama's cup. Next thing we know, Deputy Claus telling us it's 1 o'clock. Go home for your mammy's been crying because you're in jail.
Mammy? What kind of word is that for a woman? Nobody better call me a mammy.
Oh, baby, in them days, one is hard to hear now as it was back then. And I'll tell you another thing, too. A lot of them mammies had a lot of power with them white folk, so we took it. Anyway, now they use the disrespect and stuff, though. Anyhow, I gets home staggering and carrying on. Calls myself going to sneak through the window. And before I could find something to climb on, that old crazy dog that daddy's got on that. Next thing I know, daddy man standing in the door with the shotgun.
Somebody around here ought to be glad you hadn't gotten after them with a shotgun.
Papa's got the floor holier than thou. Leave well enough alone.
I'm maintaining, Pammy. He ain't. Pardon me. He's not singing a new song.
What's going on now?
Nothing, man. It's your fault. So, Papa, Daddy Man got the same shotgun in there under the mattress.
The same shotgun Daddy Man tried to teach me to shoot, and when I pulled the trigger, bam! Knocked me from the back door clean under the dining room table.
Same one. I believe this is the only one he knew how to use. Now, I see Dad standing there with that gun. I got up that pecan tree so fast. But you see, Daddy Man didn't have his glasses on, so he didn't know it was me. And I'm about to tell him because I sure didn't want to get away. Next thing I know, Dad shooting up the tree. I just started hollering, Mama! 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 Mama come running into the door. Oh, Lord, don't you shoot my baby fool. Travis, go get your daddy's glasses. Don't shoot my baby fool. Nigga, put that gun down for you till your time. Daddy man politely sat down in his rock and said, can't be no child of mine up that tree. Because every tail of mine better be in there asleep. I tell you another thing, woman. If that tail in that tree belongs to me, he better be in that bed asleep. Before Travis get back here with them glasses.
So how'd you get into the house, Papa?
Man, I dropped out that tree, ran to the side of the house by the woods, and I dove through that window. You won't play cards, you gonna draw cartoons, boy.
I mean, man, put your money up.
That's my quarter.
Now you know that quarter ain't got your name on.
Must we argue over a quarter?
And that is Remembering Papa. So let me give a little setup here for this piece. The dynamic of the family is clearly that it's the father and the three children. The mother, his wife, died when Whipple, the youngest son, was born, soon after he was born. Mm-hmm. So that gives you a little setup there. So this is Remembering Papa. So we were the things again, sibling rivalry, arrested development, childhood trauma, microaggression, failure to thrive, resentment. So let's jump in, ladies. Tell me what comes to mind.
You want to start, Weena?
It was definitely a spirited piece, I tell you that. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes in with this storytelling and folks are sitting around and waiting for the punchline and you hear all this laughter erupting, and it definitely resonated with me when you get with your family and maybe you're at a gathering like a holiday dinner or a picnic in the summer or a cookout. Mm-hmm. And you know, folks start to clamor around that magnetic person, and in this case it seemed like it was Papa. Mm-hmm. And he loved telling stories, and the minute he walked out of the room or he came out of the center of attention,
it was a totally different atmosphere.
Right. Yeah. You could feel the atmosphere change very quickly. And I was very interested in how Whipple and Brother Deer ended up having that hard conversation.
Mm-hmm.
very, very tough conversation. And as I heard it, Brother Deer was angry with Whipple for his life choices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can help here, Claudette, because he mentioned how old he was, but I didn't catch it.
He said, the line is, he says, you're a 16-year-old in a 26-year-old body.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I thought I heard 16 and I thought, wait a minute, is he 16? No, he's saying that emotionally, developmentally, he's 16, but he's a grown man. He's in a 26-year-old body. And that's where that idea of arrested development comes in, where, you know, we see certain people who may still be living at home. They may not have found their career path. They may have been into some trouble with the law, or they may be playing the field, sowing their royal oats in relationships, well past the point that other people may say you should be firmly established and moving in a particular direction in life.
And it seems that, Brother Deer was really upset with, you know, just the fact that he was content in where he was. Like, you know, you shouldn't be content because you should be further along. You should be in a better place. And so, but Whipple was really expressive in saying that my life is okay the way it is. And it's not going to be perfect like yours. And so that right there, it lets you know that their perspective of each other and their lives was not true to what they thought about themselves. You know, you know, each one thought, I'm good, I'm doing the right thing. But each one looked differently because of resentment, because of jealousy, because of, you know, so many emotions that you may have derived from a child, from childhood. And so here, where do we find out or discover this, where this rivalry started? Like, what stemmed it? What was there some level of favoritism that caused one to seem like they were better than the other or needed to even act like that? Like, where did all this come from?
Yeah. And I don't know who the oldest child is, but it seemed
Sounds like Tammy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like Brother Deer was definitely older than Whipple. Maybe Whipple was the youngest.
Right.
And so Brother Deer was playing his role, being the older brother, saying, you know, you need to get it together. And he was taking on a lot of responsibility and really coming down hard on the baby of the family. And it's so normal in family situations that the baby gets to do what babies do, which is kind of grow, develop, watch everybody else do the heavy lifting. And other people who are doing the heavy lifting have something to say about it.
But even even in Pammy, she, you know, said, I'm tired of always having to act like mommy. And so even in her, you know, being that older of the two, of the, you know, of the three, you know, taking on this space that, you know, mommy was gone from us at a young age. And so I had to take up this role and I had to come in and step in between you two. I have to let you know about yourself, Whipple, and let you know about yourself, Brother Deer, because even though you think both of you think you're okay, you're not. And so her perspective was even at a higher level. Like, I'm looking down on the two of you and this foolishness has to stop.
Right, right. And Whipple accuses Brother Deer of being embarrassed of him and really not seeing him.
We
were in the same high school for 2 years, or we played on the same squad, and you didn't acknowledge me. And then he really sticks the knife in and twists it when he tells him, you know, I think that your lifestyle is fake. You're not a real person. You and your friends, you know, this kind of straight laced white collar life that you're living, you know, it's not real. So there were a lot of jabs being thrown.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There clearly is a lot between between these two brothers, because one of the things that he tells Brother Deer tells him to be a man, and he asks by whose terms, right? By whose standards.
Right.
By whose standards? And when he said it, I thought, okay, you know what? That's a good question, because people tell us, you know, oh, act like a grown woman or be a man. And it's, yeah, but by whose standards? Don't I get to define, you know, my own standards? And I think that's what Whipple was saying to Brother Deer is am I supposed to be a man by your definition or by Papa's definition or by Pammy's definition? Whose definition am I supposed to be, you know, a man by? Mm-hmm. And I think that was a fair question for him to raise, you know, because it, like you alluded to in the story points to, you know, they're together because, you know, they're thinking they're going to have a nice evening of storytelling so Papa could see all of his children together and this, that, and the other thing. And you, and one of the things Whipple says to him is you purposely wait for both of them to leave the room. Mm.
Yeah.
Before you say something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And from Whipple's perspective, I kind of felt like Whipple was saying, this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You wait. You it's like you lie in wait before you attack.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And that's the dynamic of these two brothers. This very it's almost like I think you're in the way. I think you're taking advantage. Why do you even care? You've never paid any attention to me before anyway.
Right.
So mm-hmm. why now all of a sudden am I, you know, all in your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
It's right. So easy in a family like this for sibling rivalry to spring up. Right now, we only have one parent's attention to compete for.
Right.
Who knows whether or not the trauma of losing mama was ever really addressed and handled in a way that helped everybody feel like they could rely on each other. And clinically, we know that often, depending on what time a parent is lost or trauma occurs, generally, males tend to internalize trauma and not process out.
Mm-hmm.
So they go inward. They've got their own thoughts and feelings about how things are after mom is gone. And I found it curious that Papa didn't necessarily seem to be really privy to all of it or to the extent of which there was tension between the siblings. Mm-hmm. The siblings have their own microcosm that they're living in.
Right.
And then Papa comes in as the sun and they're the planets that rotate around him. But he's not necessarily really engaged in helping them to have unity and foster that loving relationship that Pammy is talking about. Right. We're supposed to love each other.
Right. And I wonder if part of that is because Pammy swoops in.
Right.
Right. She's because you can kind of tell she walked back in as they were arguing and she immediately, you know, kind of took control. She put the brothers basically in timeout. She was like, listen, kill each other later.
Mm-hmm.
But right now,
you got to be at peace. Yeah.
Right. Right. Right now, we're going to do this for Papa. And that's probably what she's always done. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever they got into something. And if Papa was anywhere nearby, she probably handled it and shut it down as much as possible and forced them to kind of go to opposite corners and behave while Papa was present. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that probably was not good for the two of them. Because I think she also, in doing that, allowed the resentment that they have for each other to fester as opposed to forcing them to get to a place where they could just really release what's really going on inside of both of them.
Yeah.
Right. Because Whipple clearly, to me listening to it today, Whipple clearly feels some kind of way, not in a negative way, but in a different kind of way, that he has a big brother that never acknowledged him, that he feels was ashamed of him.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, this dynamic is really indicative of how so many families are operating today. Like there's this, you know, one overarching sibling that feels like they have to be the parent in situations that there's one parent visible. And so Pammy, continues to exhibit that behavior. And there almost seems like they're fighting for her approval. Because Brother Deer says, I am always doing the right thing, you know? And so he wanted, almost as if he wanted to appear to continue to exhibit the right thing and you're the wrong thing. And so in this role, Tammy's the mom, Brother Deer's the dad, and little Whipple is just stuck out here just trying to make it because he has no mother, no father, you know, in his eyes, he's just like, I'm just surviving. I'm just making, I'm just doing the thing. I'm just living my life. I'm just trying to, you know, grow and grow. And so he has this example of Brother Deer and Pammy that he has to keep looking at to mirror his life against. And it's not just, I didn't see that it was just Brother Deer that he was inferior to, but even the fact that there was no mother there.
Yeah.
So I don't have a shoulder to cry on or somebody to coddle me, because even Pammy was like taking digs at him. Like, you need to get it together.
I like that you brought up that dynamic. I can always find myself in these stories. I'm the baby of four, and my siblings are considerably older. The sibling closest to me is 8 years older than me, and the next one is 13 years older than me, and the next one is 15. And I always felt like I had five parents. I always felt like I had a mom, a dad, two additional moms, and another dad. Everybody
That's a lot telling of parenting. Me
what to do, when to do it, you know. And if I was in any way lax about something, there was always somebody to look up to. You know, that's like, oh, I'm lifting your weight, or you know, good Lord, when you gonna grow up? And, you know, it all depends on the temperament of the person who's in that sibling role, how they're going to take that. And Whipple absolutely decided that he was going to take his time. He was going to do his thing. Mm-hmm. And he was unapologetic for it. And that can go one of two ways. Some baby children are like, I get to be unapologetic. I have the luxury of coming last and learning from everybody's mistakes and making my own.
Yes.
You all took the weight on of being the first or the most responsible, and I'm going to play my role of being the baby.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. But I think that also speaks to, you know, why do I even have to be responsible? What do you want me to be responsible for? Right. What do you want me to be responsible for? Because you're telling me to get it together, but how do you want me to get it together? You're acknowledging the fact that I have an artistic talent, but you're not stepping up to say, let me help you do this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know, like I think Brother Deer tells him something about Pammy told him he had some kind of art opportunity and he decided not to do it. And he ran into somebody and, you know, she said he stopped doing the class and this, that, and the other thing. But I think it's in the approach, because to me, Brother Deer was, as Esmalina likes to say, he was coming in a little hot.
Yeah.
You know, and so I kind of felt Whipple, because if you come in hot like that with me, if you come in accusing and you drop this and you drop that and you didn't do this and you didn't do that, I'm just basically, I'm standing my ground. Listen, you could be right. And in my head, I could be thinking, you know what, he's right.
Yeah.
But because you're coming at me like that, I'm standing my ground.
Mm-hmm.
I'm digging in, because you're not going to bulldoze me like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, did I hear, though, Brother Deer accuse Whipple of needing to be bailed out? And by bailed out, did he mean sometimes in and out of trouble with the law, or just bailed out of a financial jam? What were we talking about?
Bailed out at the beginning of the play, when the play opens, what happens is Whipple and Papa are walking into the home and they're in full argument because Papa literally had to go bail him out of jail. He had a domestic violence situation with his girlfriend. Yeah. Now Whipple contends that it was accidental, but she still called the police, but she's not going to press charges or whatever. So this was one of those episodes where Papa had to go bail him out again. So, and it's not, and I don't think Papa necessarily bails Whipple out financially, but Pammy and Brother Deer thinks that he does. I think they think that he bails them out. Whatever he gets into, if he decides he's not going to to do something, okay, fine, that's fine. But, you know, what you going to do now? What else are you going to do? Right? But in this particular case, yeah, he bailed him out in a legal sense.
In a legal sense. Yeah, but so you see, you know, the siblings jump into their parents' protection. And I know so many people who can relate to that, where siblings see one sibling seemingly taking advantage of the parent and they feel deputized to say something. Parent is getting older, or you're using our parents' resources inappropriately. We need to protect the parent because you're taking advantage of the situation. And so we got to stop this. You're eating too much food from the refrigerator. You're using too many utilities. You've outslept the couch. Now we need a new couch in the basement because you can't find a place to stay.
You're doing too much. Couch. I love that.
You've outslept the couch, all of it. And so in this regard, I can understand Brother Deer's frustration and the implications of being bailed out, and some of the charges that he's potentially coming up on are very serious. Somebody has to ask the hard questions. Now, what answers you get, you know, that's left up to chance. But when are you going to do something that doesn't endanger your future is a valid question.
Right.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think and even with Papa, there's that little piece in there where they're talking about the guns, and Whipple asked him something about the pearl handle gun, and Papa says, yeah, and he asked him, you're not gonna pawn it, are you? You know, and Whipple says, you know, I know I've messed up before, but I wouldn't do that to you. I would never do that to you. Right. And when he said I took it two ways. It was kind of like, okay, now I wouldn't do it to you, but if it was somebody else, and you know, that might be an opportunity. But the other part of it was Whipple was to me, in his own little way, he was kind of reassuring Papa that I whatever I've done, I would never do anything intentionally to hurt you or to take from you. Right. So to me, that was Whipple acknowledging to some degree that he's fully aware that the way that he's living his life is problematic.
And admitting
that also to me also exemplified him securing that favorite spot, that spot that he thinks that, you know, daddy's going to always be there for me. And going back to looking at how he resented his brother, but even they resented him for having that space, for having that always bailed out opportunity. Like, you know, you need to grow up because you always are being bailed out. And so here is
this. So that's almost, that's almost like you found a way to always get more attention than everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in that baby spot, that youngest role, you know, he's acknowledging that I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to do anything because I don't want you to lose that favor towards me. I don't want you to, you know, turn away from me. I want you to continue to remain, to be there for me, daddy, in these spaces. And so just the fact that they don't allow daddy to see their rivalry is very strategic. You know, and so that they can stay in the light of daddy's eyes, each of them in their own right, like really stay in the light of daddy's eyes, that I'm the one brother there. I'm the one that's doing the right thing. I'm the one that's successful. Pammy being the one that's taking charge and helping to lead the family and, you know, holding the anchor. And then, you know, Whipple just being the favorite. And that's all I need to be is daddy's favorite, you know. And so they're being very strategic in honoring or holding up their role and the light that they see or the light that daddy sees in their eyes individually.
Yeah. One of the things Pammy says to them when she walks in on them arguing, that I thought it was, I was like, okay, that was a very classic, you know, old DeShal kind of move. She hit Whipple. She was like, okay, you know what? Everybody keeps telling you to get it together. You don't want to get it together fine, but stop causing problems. Right. But right. Then she turns around and she says to Brother Dear, you know what? You want to keep telling him not, you know, to get it together. But half the time you don't want anything to do with him. Mm-hmm. And the other half of the time you don't want anything to do with Papa. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what? So she's like, OK, so both of y'all got issues. And now what?
Yeah.
Right. But the thing that she says to him that I think Brother Dear like totally missed was when he's not causing problems, he takes care of Papa.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Because Brother Dear never even responded to that. He just went right to the next deed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tammy was definitely the more objective voice mm-hmm. in this story, where she could see not only some of the shortcomings of both of her brothers, but she could also hold up their strengths as well. Mm-hmm. She came to Whipple's defense in that moment.
Yeah.
She wasn't going to let Brother Dear cut him down without giving him his just due for yeah. the things that he was doing well. And that's a beautiful thing when a sibling can step in and be the intermediary in that way. Not that it's necessarily moved the needle for either of them this time, because as soon as the son gravitated back toward the center of that circle, they went back to the storytelling. And Renee, you said something so pivotal, how they all jockeyed for position, even yeah. in the laughing and the storytelling. And I think that it seemed like BD definitely relished being mm-hmm. able to tell a lot of those stories or have the memories and laugh and joke with Papa. And that's also a way that siblings sometimes get attention. You know, yeah, mm-hmm. I was around for this. And mm-hmm. so I remember yeah, this and this yeah, was mm-hmm. funny. And, you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so, you know, just thinking about, you know, this story and bringing it into like today's family dynamics and, you know, wanting to come to a place where you deal with these issues, where you sit down and you talk about where this level of resentment came, where this bitterness, like, you know, because we're not getting the whole story. We understand just from what you shared, Claudette, about the mom passing away. But how did they actually, you know, process that and you know, deal with that through their lives? And did it cause, you know, some type of resentment towards Whipple because he was the last one? He was the one, they may even think, you're the one that caused, you know, mommy to pass away. And so there's so much more that, you know, family therapy would actually help them to kind of deal with all of these emotions and all of these things that they're, you know, even in joking, the banter, mm-hmm. You know, the old saying says with every joke, there's some truth to it.
Right.
And so what is the truth that is not being said or that needs to be said in order mm-hmm. for them to heal and to operate in a place where they are truly not only loving each other, but liking each other, but at the space that they are and understanding, you know, who they are. Mm-hmm. Individually.
And, you know, it's like I said at the top, well, their mother dies shortly after giving birth to Whipple.
Mm-hmm.
So in this family dynamic, Whipple, you know, was the only one that did not know the mother.
Right.
Right. Of the three kids. He was that one. So but it's very interesting because I think you hit on something, Renee, in situations like that, when a mother, you know, dies in childbirth or soon after a new baby. There is that possibility that the children who were there could feel
yeah.
like that newborn baby or that child, that last child created, you know, was somehow responsible
right.
or heavily involved in that person dying. And so they could, if I'm following you right, they could mm-hmm. feel like that child took something treasured from them.
From them. Absolutely.
But also the child.
Sure.
Whipple's behavior, if we call it acting out with the, mm-hmm. you know, promiscuity and relationships and trouble with the law and all that could also be a result of feeling guilty to some extent. Was it me that mm-hmm. potentially robbed all of us of our mom's life or, yeah. you know, dad's wife? And when that goes unsaid in a family, these types of relationships happen, that dissension mm-hmm. can grow like a weed because there's nobody there to help anybody process how everybody is feeling mm-hmm. and whether or not responsibility is being placed on any particular person's shoulders.
Yeah.
So then it stands to reason that Brother Dear could kind of feel like Whipple had some degree of responsibility for them losing their mother.
Potentially.
And that could lead to resentment and him just kind of feeling like almost like Whipple just shouldn't be there. So if I don't acknowledge you, you don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Right. If I don't acknowledge you, you don't exist. But on the other side of that, you do exist and
you're embarrassing me.
Right. You're embarrassing me because Whipple said I was more concerned in high school in getting laid than being who you were being. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that was embarrassing to Brother Dear because clearly he had determined what his standards were going to be. And he was lining himself up to his standards. And his brother wasn't lining himself up to his standards. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, and you don't get the indication that Brother Dear ever sought to have any kind of relationship with Whipple where he could nurture or teach his brother to have different standards.
Yeah. He was showing up and setting the example without being the example. Like, I'm showing you, but I'm not nurturing you in a sense of exposing you to why I am being the way that I'm being, because I'm actually angry at you. There's actually something that I feel against you because you were that last child, because you were the one that took mommy away. And so I'm just going to continue to show up as the best son, the best man, I'm the best man. And I'm going to show you that, but I don't want any dealings with you. And see, that's where the disconnect comes, because in that space, he could have been a viable example for him by just loving and learning to like him, by taking time out and saying, this is what, hey, little brother, this is what I'm doing and this is why I'm doing it. And there's so much that could have been gained from that. But instead, he dealt with him with a long arm and said, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't want you to be a part of it, but just see my strides, see how good I am, see how I'm showing up as the perfect man, and you're not.
Wow.
Yeah.
So one of the things that, and it's so funny because you just use that whole love like thing. One of the things Pammy told him a couple of times is your brothers, you have to love each other.
Yeah.
Liking each other is a totally different animal. But you got to love each other. So when she said it the second time, I thought, okay, you know what? Pammy doesn't think these two really even love each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, you know what? That's possible. That's, you got two brothers, where one, like Renee just said, it's just angry. I'm just angry with you. The mere mention of your name, the mere presence of you near me, knowing that your name is on the family tree, just angers me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm just angry. Mm-hmm. And so because that's his posture, then you've got the other brother that's just like, okay, so he's showing up today. That means I got to be on a different stage today.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I like so much about this work, that so many people can relate to this, mm-hmm. that, we get assigned to a family. We don't get to choose who our family members are. And like and love are two very different things. And you do have siblings who have such different temperaments that they're like oil and water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't intervene, they can grow apart like this and come together and put on a mask when they're in company, good company of other people. And as soon as other people turn their backs, you see some of the hate and the vitriol that comes out. Mm. And sometimes those relationships will never be repaired.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't have the right intervention, this could absolutely play out.
Yeah. And I also think about the part that Papa played in causing just the rivalry and the disconnect between the siblings, because, you know, just imagine, you know, him being now the lead of the family. There's no mommy anymore. And so he put the pressure on Tammy to be the mother, to be, you know, all the things that she showed up being, you know, I'm in charge. I'm the peacemaker. I'm the dictator. I'm all of these roles. And then maybe him placing the same capacity on brother dear and saying, you're the big brother. You're the example. You do this, you do that, you know, and giving him that directive and that lead. And so Whipple was left with, well, I'm what's left. I'm the one that gets coddled. I'm the one that gets, you know, the little extra attention. And so I'm the one that don't have to do as much. And so in the best possibility of being the best father that he could, he actually played a part in the disconnect between his children.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even turning the blind eye, just not engaging.
Yes.
To the extent that he would even dare to ask, are you okay with each other?
Right. Right. Right.
And if not, how can I help?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because as the father, he's not stupid or blind. He can see that the baby is getting into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He just came from bailing him out. And he can see that each of his children have different temperaments, and he gets to decide what he's going to do with that. Some parents choose to engage, and some decide that they don't have the tools to engage.
Mm-hmm.
And they go into the fairy tale of storytelling. And I just want to spend time with you all and have a harmonious cookout. Or for my birthday, can we just come together and have a peaceful dinner? And if parents don't step in and facilitate for young people that safe space for them to talk, then who will?
Yeah, that is so true.
And I think Papa knows too, you know, he may not know how deep it is, but I think he knows that there is some discord, some disconnect, because when he comes back in, the first thing that he says, he doesn't say what's going on. He says, what's going on now?
Right, right.
Which indicates that's not the first time he's walked in on something or he's had an inkling of something, right? But what happens is, rather than him, like you're saying, you know, rather than him pushing forward in the conversation, he just kind of allows them to say, oh, nothing, you know, nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And move to the next thing, right? And when Papa asked Pammy earlier, you know, in the piece, did she want to play cards with them? And she said, no, I'll watch because you guys cheat. You know, Papa changes the rules.
Right.
And this one does that, and this one does that. And so what that says to me, based on what you guys are saying, is that it's very clear to Pammy in the family dynamic that each of them gets to set their own rules and whatever they're doing.
Mm.
And everybody else just kind of flows, or they make a decision to step outside of it like Pammy did.
Yeah.
But the challenge with that is what you were saying, Wena, is that that's fine. And they're fine with that as long as Papa remains in the center.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. The moment he's out of the center physically, all of that, you know, it kind of just folds in.
Yeah. And so here is so much that can happen in that space. Like, they are just surviving as a family. They're just keeping it, you know, keeping it civil, you know, as a family. But imagine, you know, when Papa goes home, when he's gone, when he's no longer part of the picture, what wedge it could really remain between them. Like, that's the travesty. And really, healing communication needs to take place, and having that time where Papa can say, talk to me, tell me about what's going on, and it be maybe a uniform conversation, not just something where he deals with one child and each person individually, but coming together, because Papa's not going to always be here. And so let's love one another. You know, the most beautiful thing for parents to be able to see is their children getting along and helping each other and being there for each other when they're not looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're not looking, when I'm not apart, when I'm not in the middle of it all, And so how do I secure that now so that, because we know we can't last always, you know, we sooner or later, we're all going home. And so in that, how do I bring that love and that like back to the family so that you guys can be there when I'm not?
I mean, and those are terrific questions. So I put them out there for some answers. How do we do that? Right. Right. How do we do that? Because, you know, we have family reunions and we have this, that, and the other thing. Goodness. We have the dinners, we have the barbecues, and, you know, we share all of the stories and all of that kind of stuff. But then how do you get to the real conversations? How do you get to the dynamics, to those really deep soul level dynamics of what's showing up when nobody's looking?
Yeah. It's somebody right. Has to make a decision. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Or when, you know, when the light in the center is not in the room or is no longer here, then, you know, what happens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think so often in caregiving situations, and I'm hearing this a lot in different caregiving circles that I'm moving, is that you see a lot of that dynamic where you're hearing a lot of people say, you know, we probably should have had these conversations and these talks before mom or dad or grandma got to this point.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Right. And I think that's what Renee is saying. We have to start having some deeper conversations, because we all know we see people for who they are in our families. We see their personalities. We see their temperaments. Right. We see their behaviors. But in all of that, we don't necessarily have a conversation about where that stuff comes from and how we can heal from that stuff. And that's what you guys were saying we need to do, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
I think engaging in, you know, family therapy, coming to a place where, you know, somebody has to decide that we want things to be better or different, or just be in a place where we can be able to just, you know, come with each other and enjoy each other, and don't feel as though, you know, when mommy or daddy is gone, that everything is gone, that all of the secrets are gone, all of the truths about life are gone, everything. And so now we're stuck just surviving or figuring it out on our own. But if we've had those difficult conversations where daddy sharing, you know, maybe the emotional roller coaster he went through and losing his wife, and, you know, all he had to give, he may have given just the very best of who he was. And that's all he knew, because he's trying to survive. He's trying to keep his children safe and healthy. And so I can't give you all the other things. But if no one has those conversations, if we don't expose those things, then they can become cancer in relationships.
Great observation. And know that family therapy is about the subgroups as much as it's about the whole.
Yes.
So we see two people at a time, even if there are five people in the room. Mm-hmm. You don't always have to come together as a whole for us to do the work, because we understand that in every family, you've got these separate relationships and all of them might need some work. So you get to have that private space where you can do that one-on-one work with the person that you may have the bone to pick with.
Right.
And it doesn't always have to be in the presence of everybody else when it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. Because, you know, even though that one individual that may find themselves to be like a Whipple, the black sheep, like, let's start with the black sheep, like just dealing with his feelings, his emotions, the things that he's going through,
right?
Why he feels that way towards his others, and just his alienation, and helping him to heal in his space. So then when we come together, it can be a more, cohesive conversation, because now I've dealt with the me of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that the three children is a very interesting kind of dynamic, because here you have, you know, when we look at it from the perspective of their mom dying, here we have, you know, Pammy, who was the oldest child. So she was the one that had been with the mom the longest. So she had the mom and the dad dynamic the longest. Mm-hmm. And then comes Brother Dear. But Pammy seems to have adjusted to having a younger sibling much easier than Brother Dear did. But at the same time, by the time Brother Dear became an older sibling, he became an older sibling. He also became one of three children who now didn't have a mom. Mm. Right. So he not only then entered that whole posture of being a big brother, you know, of now being an older child and a big brother, but to being a big brother to someone that took his mom away. Mm. In his thought process, right? And then you have Whipple, who probably has realized in listening to years and years of these family stories that I'm the one in this family that doesn't know the woman you all keep talking about. Because I'm sure, and part of the storytelling, there's been stories about their mom, right?
Yes.
And so that's part of the healing work that you ladies are talking about. But that has to be, you know, it has to be the conversation so that you don't continue to go years with your brother not acknowledging you until he wants to, you know, lash out at you. And then you standing your ground and not wanting to have a conversation with him except to jab him because he's jabbing you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's like how long can we really just jab at each other?
Hmm.
You know, so heading to closing, ladies, let's talk about this family dynamic. And you know, you find yourself in a situation where you are. But before we go there, going back to the caregiving piece, I wondered in listening to this because again, I listened to what Pammy said about the fact that when he's not giving him trouble, he takes care of Papa.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm wondering if part of Whipple's thing is that, okay, you know, I'm all good because whatever you think I'm taking, it's wonderful and it's beautiful because I'm basically kind of in a kind of sort of caregiving role. So, you know, not to say that Papa, you know, just because you're taking care of Papa, he should keep bailing you out. Because at some point, I'll probably tell you to listen. No, we're not doing that.
Yeah, I think the broader theme around that is judgment and not to judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
Both Whipple and Brother Dear have a perception of each other, but they have limited information that they're basing that perception on. Brother Dear isn't around enough to know what Whipple is doing or not doing. He only gets the highlights and the lowlights. Mm-hmm. So every time he looks up from what he's doing in his own life, he sees that Whipple is getting in trouble and needs a bailout.
Mm-hmm.
And Whipple has decided that whatever Brother Dear is doing in his life is so fake and phony, and Brother Dear is so uninvested in him that he doesn't really know some of the softer or better parts of his older brother.
Yeah.
So if there's anything to take away from this, it's to be careful about the sweeping judgments that we make about people. You got to get in there and you got to invest before you make a statement like that, or you know, share an opinion about how someone is living their life and in a way that's not conducive to the whole. Because Whipple's making his contribution and Dad hasn't said anything about it. He went down there to get him. He had free will. Nobody put a gun to his head, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when Brother Dear steps in and advocates that he's being taken advantage of, that's a moment where he has to step back and assess, well, wait a minute, I'm the child, not the parent. So if the parent is okay with it, then why do I have such a problem with it?
Right, right. Yeah.
It's a lot to take in, but that's a good point. I think you're right. You know, we have to look at the whole, the totality, right? And the only way that we can do that is if we're invested and if we're having conversations and if we're checking on each other. We know if we know what each other has going on because we're having conversations with each other and not because somebody that knows us stopped us and said, oh, you know, such and such and such, right? Or because another member in the family said, oh, yeah, he's good, but such and such and such, right? We have to make an investment into knowing what's going on with each other so we don't make the sweeping judgment.
Right.
And we have to understand that if a parent has the capacity to make the decision to do X, Y, or Z for any particular child, then we have to step back and say, okay, you know what? That maybe that's not my lane.
That's right.
That's right.
Maybe that's not my lane. And maybe I should let Papa, or maybe I should let Big Mama or Auntie operate in that lane. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Good stuff. So as we head to a close, ladies, any other thoughts? What other things kind of came to mind for you, or what kind of wisdom would you share with somebody that finds themselves in this kind of dynamic? And I definitely want you guys to touch on that piece of potentially being in a place where the mother is no longer there with that, you know, with that younger child, and you facing that she's not there, and that feeling of resentment or anger, or you took something from me.
I think one of the things that I would say or bring to the forefront in this is that you have to be true to yourself. And so really understanding you, understanding how you processed all that you've experienced in the loss of your mother, and you know, maybe being the child that's not favored, maybe being, you know, just going into looking at each situation. And even when you come together and your sisters and brothers say certain things about you, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, but taking that as a part of an assessment, like, let me go back and see where this is coming from, why they think that, what's going on in me that may cause or trigger some things in them. And doing that on your own soul searching, going to a counselor and sitting with them and trying to process some of these feelings that you may have suppressed, some of these feelings that may have come out in a negative way that may not have been your intention. And so there's a lot of soul searching and digging and processing that one needs to go through in this place where the dynamic of our family changed because of tragedy. And that's where it started. Like, all of this stemmed from something. Papa only did the best that Papa could do. And so how do I become a viable part of this family that can give love, show love, and experience love? And so sitting in all of that and kind of understanding where I need to go from here, because I don't want to be ostracized in any way because of my success, because of my lack of success, because of me being the power in the family. For whatever reason, I don't want to be that one, but I want to be part of a family that can see me. See me.
Wow. Yeah. That's good. And before you say that, Twina, one of that came to mind while you were talking, Renee, is, you know, as you're doing that work, you're speaking with professionals, or you're speaking with someone about doing the work, and is that you have to I think we have to all realize that it's never too late to mourn or grieve.
No.
Yes.
That's so true.
Right.
So true.
Right. So we can't allow somebody to say, "Oh, dude, that was 20 years ago. You know, that was 10 years ago." I think that's part of our healing process. You have to go back and realize, I never did it.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think I sort of cried about it, but I don't really think I ever grieved. Because life says you pick up and you move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's a good segue into my thoughts. You know, family dynamics can be so trying that sometimes you just give all the way up. But the other side of that coin is that family relationships are also enduring.
Yes.
You got nothing but time to work on it. And that doesn't mean shuffle your feet and wait until the last minute to work on it, but it means that whenever you start.
Right?
And in a situation like this, communication is so critical. This family has lacked good communication. They're saying a lot of words with these stories, but the things that need to be said, the feelings that need to be expressed, the thoughts that need to be shared are not being shared. And so learning how to communicate properly and openly, one building block at a time, is going to be critical for this family to actually find their way back to each other in a way that really matters. Because right now, what they've got is a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, ladies. Smoking mirrors. That's really good. Thank you so much for diving into Remembering Papa with us. Let's remind everyone how they can get in touch with you, Renee.
Yes, you can get in touch with me through meditationalmoment.com. And there you can link into the academy that I have and connect with me as a counselor, as a life coach, as a meditational mindfulness specialist that can help you to just bring forth God alignment. And on all social media forms, you can reach me at Meditational Moment.
I love it. And you can reach me, Wena Wise, at covenanttherapy.com or on social media platforms. You can look for Covenant Counseling Group.
Thank you so much, ladies. Our last episode of the season is next week. And it's a short piece, but I think it's a piece that, like Wena said, people can relate to. It's that moment, a very brief but powerful conversation between a mother and a daughter as the daughter prepares to graduate from high school. So we will dive into that one next time around. Thank you so much, ladies. I'll see you next time.
All right.
See ya.
You've written the book and the book has been published. Now what? Beyond marketing, promoting, and sales, what are the possibilities beyond the book? Is it a podcast, an online course, a virtual event, a product line, a script for film or theater? What can you create beyond the book? That's where Pecantree Creative Solutions comes in. We will dive into the development lab with you to create the next great move ideal for you. Ideal based on your book. An ideal for reaching a diverse and varying audience. Reach out to Pecantree Creative Solutions today at www.pecantreebooks.com. More magic happens beyond the book.
Broken, fragmented, searching for wholeness, does that sound like you? Could guided meditation, online self-paced and live courses help you become unstuck and get onto a steady and consistently forward-moving path? Renee Otterick, founder of Meditational Moment Academy, is poised to assist you in strengthening and revitalizing your mental health through teaching, mentoring, life coaching, and counseling. Discover more at meditationalmoment.com or connect on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook by searching for at Meditational Moment. Let your journey to wholeness begin today.
Thoughts, comments, and observations by the host, coaches, counselors, and therapists are not to be construed as personal advice or direction. Thanks for listening to another creatively powerful and engaging episode of The Griot's Remedy. Be sure to tune in next week for new insight and discussion that gives you some things to consider as you take a look in your proverbial mirror. The Griot's Remedy, where fiction mirrors real life and everything is up for discussion. Your host is E. Claudette Freeman. Connect with her at www.eclaudetteliterary.com. For the Griot's Remedy episode, cast, panel, advertising, or resource information, email us at bookloudly@pecantreebooks.com or find us at www.pecantreebooks.com.